jobs, giving them an opportunity for education. This is what's needed.
Lo que Uganda necesita ahora es que los niños excombatientes reciban oportunidades de empleo y de educación y no soldados mercenarios de Estados Unidos rondando por el país. En México, la revista Contralínea reporta sobre el financiamiento de armas de destrucción masiva por 3 bancos extranjeros operando en el país. Nancy Flores es una reportera de la revista.
Es justamente un asunto que es muy delicado porque pareciera que los ahorros de los mexicanos estarían financiando armas de destrucción masiva. Esto es a través de 3 compañías financieras que operan en México y operan de una manera muy fuerte. Son de origen español y se trata de BBVA, Santander y Mapfre. Estas empresas, no sé si sepas, pero ganan en México entre el 10 y el 30% de sus ganancias globales. De hecho, BBVA en 2011 reportó que el 32% de estas ganancias las obtiene de México. El asunto aquí es que, bueno, todos sabemos que las inversiones no necesariamente son sus ganancias, sino incluso el dinero de los ahorradores, ¿no? Y estas tienen inversiones en compañías como Boeing, Bae System, EAD, General Dynamics y Honeywell, que son productoras de minas antipersonas, de municiones en racimo, armas de uranio empobrecido y armas nucleares. Y esto es muy, muy, muy delicado, porque además en México la reguladora de los bancos, que es la Comisión Nacional Bancaria de Valores, admite que no existe nada, ninguna regulación, ni ellos han investigado nada respecto de si el dinero de los mexicanos está yendo a este tipo de inversiones.
Y ahora de que Contralínea saca a la luz pública esta información, ¿piensas tú de que esos datos llegarán a oídos de los legisladores y habrá alguna iniciativa de ley, alguna petición de parte del público para investigarlo o poner un alto a esos negocios?
Pues eso sí sería muy importante. Y mira, sobre todo porque se trata de un estudio que hizo una organización no gubernamental española que se llama CETEM, y es un estudio muy serio que titularon Negocios Sucios, Bancos Españoles que Financian Armas Controvertidas. Y bueno, ahí se da cuenta de que estos bancos están, no solamente se trata de inversiones, sino que también tienen, de inversiones en acciones, sino también tienen inversiones en bonos, dan préstamos corporativos y además financian proyectos específicos de esas corporaciones productoras de armas de destrucción masiva, ¿no? Entonces, sí creo que los legisladores mexicanos deberían hacer algo al respecto porque, como te digo, hasta ahorita, según la Comisión Nacional Bancaria y de Valores, no existe nada que esté limitando esto, ¿no? Que esté por lo menos supervisando que el dinero de los mexicanos, lo que se está ahorrando en estos grandes bancos, no esté siendo utilizado para esto, porque hay que recordar que no se trata de hacer un negocio por el negocio, ¿no? O el dinero por el dinero. Todos tienen que tener como su parte ética y en este caso los bancos estarían no cumpliendo con esa parte, ¿no? Ni siquiera estarían informando a sus clientes mexicanos de qué se trata. Por ejemplo, el BBVA, que es el banco que tiene mayores inversiones en este tipo de industria, ni siquiera hace público, ¿no?, todo esto cuando México le representa el 30% de sus ganancias y además cuando significa que BBVA es el banco más importante en México.
¿Y la legislación mexicana, el sistema legal mexicano, no tiene alguna cláusula, alguna ley de que obligue a estas instituciones financieras a mantener transparencia?
No, nada al respecto. De hecho, incluso si uno lo pide a través de la Comisión Nacional Bancaria y de Valores, lo reservan, como información privada, o sea, ni siquiera por esa vía se puede tener acceso a la información. Y aquí el asunto es que hay un caso en específico de un fondo de BBVA Bancomer que hizo una adquisición de 64.755 acciones el 31 de agosto de 2010 de la transnacional Boeing, que es una productora de armas nucleares, entre otras cosas, por supuesto, pero en este caso se está hablando de las armas nucleares que produce. Y bueno, esa inversión fue de 3.020.000 euros, es decir, no es poquito dinero, ¿no? Son alrededor de unos 51 millones de pesos.
Y en el caso de las negociaciones que hace, cuando, por ejemplo, cuando una institución financiera solicita permiso para operar en México, ¿con quién tiene que hacer los trámites y quién se encarga de abrirles la puerta para que entren a hacer su negocio dentro?
Pues el primer contacto, digamos, que es la Secretaría de Relaciones Exteriores, pero pues ya después viene todo el asunto con la Comisión Nacional Bancaria y de Valores, que es la que está al pendiente de todo el tipo de negocios que hacen en México, ¿no? Es decir, es el que debería de regular desde lo más mínimo, que es cuánto están cobrando a sus clientes, que en México pues se sabe que es la joya de la corona para el sector financiero, sobre todo porque cobran lo que quieren y dan un pésimo servicio y nadie les pide cuentas al respecto, ¿no? Y hasta, bueno, ya cosas más importantes, como sería en este caso el asunto de ver hacia dónde se va el dinero y si estas inversiones que están haciendo en armas controvertidas tiene que ver con el dinero de los mexicanos. Es estrictamente la Comisión Nacional Bancaria de Valores, y es justamente esta, cuando nosotros le preguntamos a su vocero, la que estaba reconociendo que no existe ninguna legislación y que ellos por el momento no habrían ni siquiera tenido la voluntad o la idea de investigar si esto es así, ¿no? O sea, nos dijeron, no hay nada sobre este tema, no tenemos ninguna investigación al respecto, no estamos nosotros regulando nada.
Para aquellos que se interesen en leer más detalles, el trabajo completo de Contralínea sobre este tema y otros que manejan ustedes, ¿a dónde pueden ir?
Es www.contralinea.com.mx, ahí está la información abierta para todos.
Era Nancy Flores, reportera de la revista Contralínea, una publicación de periodismo investigativo con sede en la Ciudad de México. Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Tune in at 7 p.m. for The Great Leap Forward. This is a really good interview. This guy, he is...
Cut! Take two!
Tune in on The Great Leap Forward. We have a radio station. On Free Radio Santa Cruz. What's the matter with me? I'm losing something. What is it? Oh, yeah, my mind. on The Great Leap Forward at 7 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. It's so complicated, this whole thing. I don't know if I can take it much longer. There's nothing better on Free Radio than The Great Leap Forward. You're going to want to gather around the radio at 7 p.m. Wednesday. Every Wednesday. If you miss one, you could perish. Yes, your life could become nothing at all. Bob's making me do this. If anyone can hear this, please come help me. He's keeping me captive. Where are the refreshments anyway? I thought there'd be chocolate-covered strawberries.
After you're done, you get your treat. Get to work. I can't work like this!
Ah, but we all have to work like this. You're turned? Yeah, you're turned and you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. And coming up next, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Don't go away.
thorns are growing, and the cracks reveal the truth. We never asked for a world like this, and we've had enough of you. No more in our name will you continue to inflict your misery. No, we've had enough of all the pain the world has seen. Oh, no, you don't do this in our name. You don't do this in our name.
And that was Sarah Marlowe from her album, Times Like These. And the name of that one was Fall Down on My Knees. Well, it is a little after six. This is a two-hour show. I'm kind of wet, but okay. Just came from court about 2 hours ago, where I watched the depressing spectacle of another Santa Cruz miscarriage of justice, although sort of at the ground level, and there are a few more opportunities to rectify. We'll see how that goes. Talking about the preliminary hearing for Bradley, Alan Stewart, and Alex DeRosi, two Indie Bay photographers, have also done a lot of work on other sites, have their own site, at least Bradley does. And they faced these cooked-up felony conspiracy charges and the trespass charges in the 75 River Street vacant bank occupation of November, which has resulted in 11 indictments. I'm one of those indicted, or I should say charged. Not quite sure if I'm indicted yet or not, but I have been arraigned. So, and what it boils down to is that folks who occupied this bank apparently created some damage in the bank, according to the police, and I think that's probably true. And they want to hold 11 people that they were able to identify as just going into the building or being on the property and writing about it in a positive way, I guess. At least some of us did. And by us, I don't mean any conspiracy of people. I mean the people that have been drawn together by this indictment, who didn't really have much particular close association. A few of us know each other pretty well, and some of us were close, but not in terms of anything in particular around this event. However, what happened in court today was this was the third day of a three-day arraignment, I should say, a preliminary hearing. And this is a hearing where the attorneys for the defense go in and try to, well, the prosecution is supposed to show that they have at least a fairly good chance of convicting the folks with at least 51% of the evidence, so it can then be taken to trial. And since it was my impression regarding these two defendants, as I watched in court, I was there through the entire 3 days, that they... Each particular count, I thought, was adequately disposed of in the sense that it was shown that there was no substantive evidence for any of the counts. There were two counts of trespass and two counts of, one was felony conspiracy to trespass and vandalize, the other was felony vandalism. The only charge actually dropped was the felony vandalism charge. And that felonies are serious matters. You can go to prison for felonies. And The attorneys argued long and hard that Bradley and Stewart were journalists, which kind of it was acknowledged they were, and also that they had no intent to do anything which is required if you're going to prove a conspiracy, I was told in this particular hearing, to do anything other than to document what went down. They weren't a part of any particular organization or group or occupation cabal to take over the building. They simply went where the news was, reported the news, photographed it, interviewed people, as I did as well. And they were only there for one day. And in fact, they were only there for, who knows how long they were there. The evidence that was presented, it was pretty clear to me that they were there, from what the testimony was, that they were there for only during the first day of the occupation, taking photos of what went down. And that was sufficient to persuade the judge that, he didn't really explain, this was Judge Stillman in Department 3, a visiting judge, he didn't explain his rationale. Frankly, I was nervous shortly after walking in the courtroom and after hearing his instructions yesterday that he had 6 or 7 questions he wanted answered. It seemed clear that he was leaning, for me, in favor of finding that there was, I'm not sure from where, indication of some conspiracy that these two are not involved in, as far as I could see from just observing this trial. This hearing, at least the evidence presented, didn't indicate that. It was the claims that were made and that apparently are going to be made in these cases if Rebecca Young, the prosecutor, follows what seems to be what she's doing in this case, is that the fact that some people and the scores of people who went in and out of 75 River Street in the course of the 3 days that the vacant bank was occupied committed vandalism, that everybody who is in there conspired to do it and has to be responsible for it as a, quote, foreseeable and, I guess it's natural consequence of an earlier agreement to occupy the building in an illegal way, to trespass. And the vandalism charge seems to be the one that's being blasted about in order to persuade the community that a peaceful, symbolic occupation of a vacant bank by the notorious profiteer Wells Fargo, who's gotten, is it millions or billions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions in government money and are still foreclosing on homes right and left and fraudulent foreclosures documented up in San Francisco and hopefully soon to be documented down here, that people who are trying to protest this and raise awareness of this, who were in a building that had been vacant, and who ultimately left the building, were somehow guilty of huge crimes. And the way that that was done was that the focus has been on the graffiti that was left behind as some sort of a tremendous crime against humanity and against the community and against the police and so forth. And, you know, I will acknowledge the people who vandalize a piece of property, the police have the right to arrest them. The DA has the right to prosecute them. But going after journalists and reporters and activists who were trying to raise an issue and created no damage, did nothing other than report from the scene, I don't think that the prosecution can get away with it without crying vandalism, even though I suspect I don't know that anyone is going to be ultimately held to account for vandalism. It's all kind of the cover for this felony conspiracy to trespass, which means that anybody who engages in any occupation that can be called a trespass will then face the risk in Santa Cruz County of being arrested for a felony conspiracy to trespass, which is a sobering thought for sure. But there are some people who continue to protest nonetheless. I'm one of them, and there were scores of others who did some marching on the weekend, on Sunday, March 15th, in fact, at a rally against foreclosure. And that was actually the main feature in today's Good Times Weekly. You can check it out online, or you can check it out on your newsstand. It's free when you're in a newsstand, your local pile of Good Times newspapers, wherever you can find them. And I did some interviewing, and away we go. And let's hear some of that. By the way, if you want to call in or comment on anything that I've said, or you think has been left unsaid, any flashes of breaking news, of course, you can pass on here at 427-3772, 427-3772. And as well, I want to add, for those who want to, don't know where the Free Radio Santa Cruz stream has gone, I am trying to find a way to tell you that, because I actually found the stream by Cracky. Of course, now it appears I'm having trouble locating it. That's what always happens. But here it is. It's for those of you who have pencils, so get your pencils, and I will read to you the proper verbiage, or I should say wordiage or letterage, to use if you want to get on the Free Radio stream. It's no longer, there's no longer a link at freakradio.org. You've got to go to http://audio, A-U-D-I-O, all of these are small letters, .stream, but then in the middle of the stream, after R and before A, put the number 3. So it's str3amstream.com. 5110, that should probably do it for you, but then you can also do /listen.pls. P as in Peter, L as in Larry, S as in silly. Again, http://audio.str3am.com/5150/listen.pls. That's the audio stream of freakradio.org. So much more difficult to get out than freakradio.org. What a pity. But that's how it goes. Let's hear some chatter and tumult and maybe some singing even from the Sunday foreclosure rally in March, prepared for and sponsored by a variety of groups. Occupy Santa Cruz was one of them.
Sunday, overcast. I'm coming into the foreclosure protest, which looks like it has the largest number of people I've seen at Occupy Plaza in months, at least. I would say probably, gosh, maybe since the end of November 30th, March. It's possible. Although even that march was not very, was not as big as this one looks like it's going to be. There, the whole area is filled with people. So, again, I'm standing across the street at 1:30 looking at this rally, and we have, gosh, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 150 people. Well, I don't know. Maybe 75 to 100 people, let's be conservative. We have news media. We have foreclosures in Santa Cruz County. The sign. We have... Hey, Eduardo is here. Hey, Dennis. We have a guy with a top hat, tax the rich, feed the poor. The rich often are not smart nor hardworking. The poor are often not stupid or lazy. We have the Tent Monster's tent is here. For every bomb we drop, we could build a school. And a variety of folks I've never seen before. And the Raging Grannies are up on the steps. is a foreclosure for sale cross sign, which is the kind of sign you usually see on houses that are foreclosed on. And here's a man with a sign, 8 million foreclosures on American families. What's this mean, sir?
What does this mean? It means this is absurd. This is criminal. 8 million families foreclosed.
Now, wait a minute. I thought the criminals were the people protesting against this.
Oh, is that what you thought?
That's what the DA says.
Oh, and you believe everything the DA says?
Well, the district attorney is our district attorney.
Very true.
So you yourself, your name is?
Ken Foster.
And Ken, you're a man who has himself been working with Occupy Santa Cruz around foreclosure issues?
Yes, that's true. Uh-huh.
And what's happening in that? I know you have a house. You were trying to get a mortgage adjustment. What? And then is it happening?
Well, the house is listed as foreclosed. The date is April 24th now, and we're trying to do a short sale. So the short sale is still what's on the table.
Have you been to any of the foreclosure auctions that have actually happened?
I've never had.
Hey, Bill.
No, I never have.
I mean, I know they happen every week. I guess I should talk to the foreclosure group about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, what do you think? This is quite a turnout you've got here. I mean, are these people going to be, you know, indicted by the DA? What do you think?
I hope not.
You know, it could be an illegal assembly.
We'll be walking to all the banks. We'll be going to Chase, and I'll be giving my little scenario at Chase, because that's my bank.
Now, what happened to your dispute with Isaac? I understand that was peaceably resolved. He was a foreclosure guy who was in your house, and he decided to rent for a while. Then you had to ask him.
By foreclosure guy, let me clarify. Isaac's a long-standing activist who's with Occupy Santa Cruz. I was on the information table, and Ken generously allowed some folks to stay in his house, then even to do some renting, and then there was a dispute which caused some open, conflict between the two of them. I actually played that on the air at one point, and apparently it's been resolved. And you might say, what the hell does this have to do with anything? And you'd be right in a certain sense, but I'm glad to see that these internal conflicts do get resolved when I either have had the bad judgment or, I don't know, impetuousness, or had something on my mind that I brought them up originally. I want to kind of tie that up and tie up loose strings. This issue has been resolved. Apparently Ken and Isaac are fine with each other. Isaac is the fellow you may have seen, him, African-American guy, who he was back out there on the table before the sheriffs again stole it in front of Occupy Santa Cruz, the Occupy Plaza in front of the county courthouse on Water Street about 3 weeks ago, when there was a reoccupation that was being done during the day and sometimes at night. But that, I understand, currently the rain is probably making it difficult for anybody to do much of anything, unless they are really not only willing to get arrested by the police, and the sheriffs are willing to get wet. But anyway, here's a little more of Ken Foster, who is one of the two people I know of who have been helping by providing organizing space for Occupy Santa Cruz, as well as trying to use their houses as example of the problems that foreclosed people face. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Hello? Oh, dear. It sounds like the music man is coming on over the air. I gotta tell you, I want old-time musicals are my favorite, but the music man is not really my favorite. What's up there, caller? I guess it's just the Wells Fargo wagon coming down the street. Yes, it's the old Wells Fargo wagon. I think that may have been a hint. Because, as mentioned today, Wells Fargo leases the property across the street from its large predatory bank, which they've kept vacant for 3.5 years with a $28,000 a month lease. I'm not sure why they do that. I'm not sure if there's a tax benefit to that, or these have just been horrible times. They don't want to have a competitor next door, or what? I mean, if anybody has any solutions or answers to these questions, I'd be curious to know them. And in the meantime, there's that old Wells Fargo wagon. Actually, you don't have the wagon. You got the bank. It's just sitting there. Let's hear some more from the protest against foreclosures. So the march from, I guess it was Sunday before last. Is that right? The 15th? It's last Sunday. It was the 11th, I think. Anyway, here's more of that.
Really, because your wife was coming back and the whole house had to be sold? Or what?
Yeah, my former wife was coming back from Massachusetts to go through and stuff in the house.
He was rather upset about that for a while, feeling he hadn't gotten adequate time, but you guys worked it out?
We did. I paid back most of his money, and he apologized to me personally for being as vocal as he was, and it was very touching connection, and we made amends, and I don't blame him for being upset, because he didn't have a place to move, and neither do I for that matter, but we resolved it, and I'm glad. He's a good man.
Sounds good to me. We've been talking with
Ken Foster.
Thank you, Ken.
Sure.
So we got Robin Hood up on the steps. That's actually Joy in disguise in Lincoln Green.
Looks like it's a $5,000 event.
It is. And there's also, who are these singers over here?
They're Robbie and Friends.
There are two groups of singers, Robbie and Friends. That's five.
Raising your granny.
And we have, of course, the inevitable video journalist, the evil Abby, doing her video journalizing. You realize this could be considered criminal conspiracy at some point, Abby. Shocking.
Right now, we're going to have a short meditation, so that we can all kind of get in the mood of being calm and quiet. So
what, no rioting?
We're
meditating, not rioting.
Ah, yes, very good. And there's a list of the foreclosures in Santa Cruz County up there.
Of course, insisted that I speak along the way.
Of course. I of course, will have to occupy a few buildings as we go.
Because, as you know, mine is an important voice in the community.
That's a satirical comment, folks.
For those who are new to my style of reporting, you should understand that my comments about occupying buildings are sort of a very, very dry form of humor, because I'm accused of felony, two felonies for allegedly occupying the building of at 75 River Street back in November. And I regard this, the charge against me and 10 other people, as being bogus, false, unjustified, selective prosecution, as well as selective enforcement, insofar as the police are ignoring some folks, targeting others, and the prosecution is ignoring some police reports and targeting others. So it's also a chilling kind of activity that when the prosecution comes down on people for essentially peaceful activity, if they want to go after people who are actual vandals, I would see, as I say, no problem with that. But the problem I have with going after people who are reporters, journalists, and activists, and members of the community who are simply trying to open the eyes of the community to the behaviors of the large predatory banks that are in collusion with governments, ripping everybody off. I guess I'm repeating myself. Let's move on and hear some more of the protest, shall we?
I'm going to interview your good friend Eric Cameron, who is running against Bruce McPherson in Supervisorial District 5.
Is he a Republican, Democrat, or a Green?
He's a Democrat.
Interesting.
That's a pretty green.
There's a meditation instruction is happening, but more importantly, foreclosures in Santa Cruz County sign. 2005, 109 foreclosures. 2006, 146. 2007, 506. 2008, 1,351. 2009, 1,458. 2010, 1,686, in 2011, 1,446, and it looks like in 2012,
let us reach in. We believe that the bank,
133 in 2012. Here's a little of the meditation, breathing, and breathing.
And reach out.
Well, meditate.
sedated or well medicated, one of the two, or both.
Right. Maybe both.
So here we have two activists, Santa Cruz Friends meeting Quakers. Hi, what's this about? Why are the Quakers supporting this march?
I don't care to talk.
No? How about you? Do you care to talk? Why are the Quakers supporting this march?
We manifest, we make real our belief through testimonies, including social justice, equality, peace, and simplicity. This is right up our alley.
Okay. Any Quakers having their homes foreclosed on that you know of?
Yes, but I don't feel free to talk about it.
I hope they're doing better than the rest of us, or at least as well. Thanks.
Thank you.
There are a lot of signs over here. As you can hear, some people are more outgoing, willing to talk than others. Signs say 99% is too big to fail, and collect federal bailouts if you are a corporation. A lot of signs here. You're carrying one sign or two?
Bigots.
We have very special signs. You have all the special signs, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, yeah, Robert, would you like a sign?
Well, there's a
plethora of signs.
A plethora of signs.
We have cartoons. We've got In Greed We Trust.
In Greed We Trust.
You want In Greed We Trust?
Is there anything supporting our local DA?
Nothing supporting the local DA. He doesn't seem to be very popular with this group. We have Banksters of America. Banksters of America.
This sign just came apart.
Oh, dear. Okay. Let me fix the sign.
Yeah. Free radio. Joel, you have a plan here?
Well, just a request of you. I thought of your recording abilities. I wanted to go ask him how he can explain their exoneration of felonies committed by deputies on duty in a way that it's not a conspiracy to pervert and obstruct justice.
Are we talking about some recent felonies or some older felonies?
No.
Which felonies are you talking about?
When I was assaulted and battered by two sheriff's deputies.
And how long ago was that?
That was in July.
And where did that happen?
In the parking lot right over here.
What were the circumstances?
I was walking out of my house, and they decided they were going to interrogate me, and I didn't have any information for them. And they then decided they were going to search my pack, and I told them I don't consent to that because they didn't have cause. And they grabbed me and searched my pack. And even if they found contraband, it would have been admissible. I mean, it was bad policing. They weren't wearing their name tags. And at the exoneration, it says even though what you complain about occurred, that they were justified, and psychopaths are always justified, and it was lawful because they have their own penal code that only they know about, and it was proper, which are weasel words for whatever you want it to mean.
When did this happen? What time of day?
It was 5 in the afternoon.
And were there any witnesses?
Actually, no. Even though there were like 30 police surrounding the place, there was a report of a gunshot. And I needed to go talk to the IA sergeant to see if he even identified the officers and what story he got from them.
The IA is the internal affairs sergeant who's supposed to be keeping an eye on possible police misconduct, dealing with citizen complaints about the police department.
And basically, I was thinking to go in there maybe with my media tag from the sheriff's department, and with you as my recording assistant.
Well, it's a possibility. I have a busy week next week,
but we could
if you call me and remind me on the machine, I may call you back in less than a week.
Yeah, okay.
Even sooner. A man with a mat. Look at that. He's wearing a bandana. The first be-scarfed individual I've seen. Let me ask another individual. We've been talking with
Joel Kappa.
Thank you, Joel. And good luck with that. You call me about that. You, sir, what's your name anyway?
Drew Lewis.
And, Drew, you have a sign on your back. 99% is too big to fail. Isn't that a little cliche? I mean, they're failing all over the place. The banks are winning. What? Are you crazy?
Yeah, you have to be crazy to be involved in this wake-up here. I mean, we're waking from a bad dream, and it seems like it's crazy, but that's what the reality is. So, you know, I mean, if you look at the Thrive movie, and there's a good article about it in the Good Times this week and the Connection magazine, it's a major wake-up call, you know, that the illusion is lifting, and, you know, it all seems crazy, but, you know, that's because we've been believing the fantasy, and now we're waking up.
And we've been talking with...
What's that?
Your name again.
Oh, Drew Lewis.
Of course. Who else would you be? But Drew. Thank you, Drew.
You're welcome.
Is your dog involved in this protest?
Yes.
And what is your dog's name?
Whisper, but he'll be shouting today.
Whisper is keeping... Because he's a pretty sedate dog. What is your
name? Oh, yes. Was my name?
Yeah.
Oh, Katrina.
Katrina?
Katrina.
Katrina, as in the hurricane.
Yes.
And were you? Did you come before the hurricane?
Yes, I did. It has a lot more energy than me. So.
You've been Katrina all your life, and the hurricane just recently
was... They named it after me.
Well, that could be ominous. Now, how did you hear about this protest?
You know, I've been walking around town just finding out what's going on, enjoying the music, and I just came upon this and said, come on. That's her first chance to be in an Occupy protest.
She looks pretty sleepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure she stays away.
A nap,
luckily,
so.
We're not at 11 o'clock and she won't be arrested yet.
She's pretty sedate.
Thank you, Katrina.
You're welcome. Take care.
All right. Susan, I see you have arrived with buttons and signs. Warmongers and fat cats are stealing our future. What about those judges and bailiffs that don't want you to go into court?
Yes. They're bad, too. But they'll let me in court next time.
I see. So you're going to go back to Department 2 and the evil Judge Gallagher?
Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully the jury will be nicer this time.
You were ousted for what? Initially communicating with Gary Johnson and then throwing him a kiss later?
Well, no, the initial communication was the kiss peace sign combo.
I just
waved in his direction when he turned around.
This is considered possibly kind of a Taliban-like signal you were trying to communicate.
Yes.
And of course, we're talking about Gary Johnson, who goes on trial on Monday. Jury selection begins in Department 2 at 9 o'clock. For those who are interested, Judge Gallagher again will be presiding. Gary is accused of violating 647E, the state lodging law, which essentially what he was doing was he was sleeping on a bench with a sign, something to the effect that sleeping is not a crime, or, I don't know, end the reign of cruelty, something about the specifics around Santa Cruz's criminalization of homeless people. And since they have no place for homeless people to sleep, 95% of them, yet they insist on making it a crime for them to fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night, or actually any time, anywhere, if you use the state code 647E, which gives such broad discretion to the police that, you know, they can call lodging whatever they want, it looks like. That was one of the issues in Gary Johnson's prior trial. He was previously tried on the same charge, and he's a very principled guy. He's gone back for because he has to sleep every night. He said he'd best do it in a public place where it'd be clear that he's protesting the laws, and in the area where that's the most clearest public forum, right next to the government building where people come to petition the government for redress of grievances. And there's a bench right outside the courthouse. It's actually, it's right down in the parking area. You can pass. Usually you pass by it as you walk up the main entrance to the courthouse. So the issue was raised in the court of Judge Gallagher, I think it was last spring, in the Peace Camp 2010 trials. What about, Gary was accused, along with four or five others, of lodging, which you would think would mean something a little more permanent than sleeping. And there wasn't really much testimony, if any. It's a little vague in my mind. I don't recall there being testimony presented that he'd set up a teepee or a Kwan Sun hut or started cooking, French fried potatoes there. But he did sleep there at night with a sign that said something to the effect of opposition to the sleeping ban. And Judge Gallagher instructed the jury that sleeping was an element of lodging. And it was not, I don't think anybody understood what lodging was, but the jury, under guidance from Judge Gallagher, found Gary guilty. He was sentenced to 6 months in jail. That sentence, after he served 2 weeks of it, was put on appeal. But now, more recently, about 2 or 3 months ago, he was arrested again for a similar ongoing protest. Around the same time Occupy Santa Cruz was sleeping and protesting on the other side of the building. Actually, I think it was a month after the authorities had simply driven away everybody with threats of arrest, tickets that didn't show up in court, and destruction of tents and seizure of property. Constitutional behavior Santa Cruz style. And Gary again was arrested repeatedly for sleeping with a sign and on this bench. And now he's going to trial. He's been in jail for 2 months. His bail has been $5,000. The judge would not let him out on OR since Gary said, I have to sleep where I have to sleep. He apparently is not following the age-old dictum for the lower classes, hide out or get out, as I kind of describe former Mayor Mike Rutkin's. It's actually the policy of Mayor Don Lane, in spite of his honeyed words about the homeless. There's a policy in town, a law in town, the sleeping ban law that he supports. That's Municipal Code 6.36.010A for those with municipal code books in hand. Anyway, Susan here, this was on was in the courtroom when a hearing came up for Gary a couple of weeks ago. Actually, it's almost a month ago now, I think. And she says, blew him a kiss and gave him the peace sign, and that was that upset the bailiffs, not necessarily the judge. I don't think the judge did anything. I was watching the judge, and I didn't see anything happen. I didn't see Susan actually do this. She described it to me later. But I think she did it a second time, and the bailiffs surrounded her and demanded she leave, and she became upset. She said, I'm a member of the public. I want to stay. And they threw her out anyway. She came back. They threw her out a second time. I think she came back a third time, and they threw her out a third time. They didn't take it any further than that, but I regarded that as very courageous action on her part. She wasn't trying to disrupt anything. She was acting in a human manner. And you have this incredibly overreactive, repressive response. And people who are individually trying to stand up, but getting crushed by the force of authority. That's really the most dangerous thing about the trials that I'm now seeing coming up, even though, for me, it's personally very frightening and exhausting and depressing. Here is some more from a not depressing day, the foreclosure march, I believe, of March. I said 15th, but it wasn't. It was the 11th that this march happened. March on March 11th.
Oh, yeah, it was a terrorist signal, for sure.
They were appropriate in making sure you didn't carry out your evil scheme. You were removed by how many?
They had to remove me. The whole courtroom. I mean, they dismissed the whole courtroom for a little small period just to get me out of there.
You were a menace. And then you came back. What were you thinking of? How many times did you come back twice?
If I could promise to be quiet, they would let me in, I thought.
Not to give the peace sign in court.
And promise not to give the peace sign.
There you go.
Or a Zig Heil sign. Here comes the sun. That's great.
All right. The sun's coming. Of course, that means my bathrobe is going to be... I'm wearing my bathrobe.
Bathrobe.
And my teddy bear Eduardo is with me. It's going to be a hot scene. So, again, we've been talking with the...
Susan Wirth.
And her two pooches.
Yeah.
Whose names are...
Rivet and Dottie.
Thank you. Thank you, Rivet and Dottie. Hey there, masked man. You're the only man with a mask here. Doesn't he feel kind of a lonely vigil here?
Not really. Actually, there's somebody on the other side as well.
So there are two of you. Is this a conspiracy for him?
Not at all. This is simple, basic self-protection.
In other words, you have a cold and you don't want anybody else to get it? No, you're protecting other people.
I'm protecting myself and other people. And
you're not concerned with surveillance here by any chance.
Considering the current laws that are going through Congress right now, absolutely.
But
I think we
all. DA Bob Lee would never do such a thing, would he? I mean, he wouldn't prosecute innocent people for felonies.
It happens all the time, doesn't it?
Well, oh, come on. Let's not be negative about this. I mean, things are improving in Santa Cruz.
I'm seeing very little improvement. I still see gates around the courthouse here.
Oh, no, that's to protect the grass. The grass could at any time be assaulted by this crowd. Surely you...
And what the speaker is referring to is an orange mesh fence that is up around every lawn on the Water Street side of the courthouse, making it impassable with do not trespass or can't go here or stay away type signs, which were designed to drive away Occupy Santa Cruz activists. Just as the 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. curfew that is now covers the entire county property at the courthouse and at the county building is also a massive attack on the civil liberties of everyone, but specifically directed at Occupy Santa Cruz people.
Want our greenery to remain in its pristine condition?
I'd like it to be used by the community that funds it.
Oh, you wild-eyed idealist,
you. This crazy.
Would you like to give your name for our police records?
Ricardo.
Thank you, Ricardo. We have here a woman who's preparing signs, who's backing away rapidly with her masking tape. I think she's a part of the conspiracy here to do a protest, which, as we know, will soon be illegal.
I think it's already somewhat illegal, right, doing a protest? If there are any public officials around, I don't see any public officials.
We could declare, sure, we could bring in a public official.
Let's not do that. I think given the laws we have now, it would be dangerous to have public officials here,
Remind us of the new law that impacts people with
corporate. Which, of course, is very frightening. And then there's the other one, which was directed at the G8 conference in Chicago, which is if there are public officials or there's a national event, that could actually be 10 years in prison for protesting outdoors.
Has that been signed by the Fuhrer?
No. That's not. It has not gone into effect, but I think it did. It has been proposed, and I think it passed a chamber. Do you know that?
All right, we'll keep our eye on that law because there has to be some way of controlling these mobs, you know.
I think that people need to be able to protest, especially if they're out on public.
You can write letters to the Times.
I don't know that that's doing a lot of good.
We'll have to think about that.
We'll have to think about it.
We've been talking with an individual who prefers to remain, should we say, anonymous. Thank you. I'm talking with two criminals who don't want to be on tape. They're rapidly heading the other direction. Sylvia, you want to be off tape? A number of people here do not wish to be identified or on tape. There's a certain nervous quality. But Steve Plates is never afraid to say a word or two or five or 20. Word, Steve?
It's a wonderful day for foreclosures. We're stopping foreclosures today. No more foreclosures from this day on.
I see.
We won't allow it.
Well said, Steve Plitch. Where are you folks coming from? Are you local? I'm with the Free Radio. Why are you at this?
Habla español o inglés?
Español.
A mi español es pequeño, pero ¿qué piensas de esta manifestación?
Está muy bien.
¿Tienes una casa o para ustedes? ¿Cómo se dice? How do you say rent in español? ¿Cómo se dice en español rent?
Renta.
Renta. And a renter is... Mi costa para mi español es demasiado pequeño.
It's kind of pathetic. Try me, listen to me do this Spanish language dance, but... there are some people speaking Spanish who are in this march, and good for them.
Entonces, ¿qué quiere usted? ¿Qué quiere usted?
Venimos a apoyar.
¿Otra vez?
Venimos a apoyar.
¿Apoyar? ¿Qué usted es esto?
Aquí para usar unión.
Sí, sí, yo entiendo. Entonces,
he's saying he wants a union. He wants to, presumably wants solidarity. And he was there with his wife and his child.
I'll learn more Spanish. Sorry.
Not right now.
So are you here as a clergyman, Brian, an attorney, or a ne'er-do-well?
I'm here as a member of the community.
So you're going to keep your eye out for lawbreakers of all kinds? Banks particularly.
Banks in particular.
Yeah. And I know that you have some legal skills. Have you been involved at all in Occupy Santa Cruz and helping?
Not very much. There's people with greater legal skills than I have in the areas they're working on.
But no greater enthusiasm.
No greater enthusiasm.
We've been talking with?
Brian Merton.
Thanks, Brian. So the march is setting out, including Jesus here with his foreclosure cross. What's your name?
I'm going to bear the cross.
Tom. And Tom, I see that people are taking to the streets and blocking traffic. What's going on? This is illegal. Can't somebody stop this? Don't I know you from somewhere? I recognize you with those glasses. In fact, that's the evil Sandino. And second, it's Liberty. Liberty is around. Augusto. Fair enough. Thank you, by the way, for holding off on the room. I guess the room won't be up. So the people have taken to the streets here. I was trying to negotiate a McHenry room, if you wonder what that little exchange is about, listeners.
And again, a quick announcement on that, since it was mentioned briefly. Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, will be in Santa Cruz and speaking at a India Joe's event that's going to be happening on March 25th, Sunday evening at 4:30. And it's open to the public. Not quite clear if it's free or if there's a donation requested or if there's a... You get in free, but if you want to buy, you got to have food. If you want to eat, you have to pay something. But it's... I think that there's going to be broad leeway. McHenry is the author of Cooking for Peace, or Hungry for Peace, I think it is. Maybe it's also Cooking for Peace. He's written a couple books. And he's got a new book coming out, and he has been going around cooking for the various occupations. That is to say, for the various occupies. And he's been kind of sending me radio reports. And there'll be another such report coming up at noon on Sunday when I do my show. My show actually starts at 9:30. And goes all the way to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So sometimes even further. You can check it out. Listen to McHenry speak. He usually is an engaging manner. He's a happy fellow. At least he sounds happy in spite of all the difficulties that authorities try to heap upon him. And he'll be coming to Santa Cruz again on March 25th, 4:30, India Joe's restaurant, which I guess is around, isn't that around 418 Front Street or 415 Front? It's right across from the Metro on Front Street for those who, that should get you there, hopefully. You are tuned to Freak Radio at 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we're also on a stream, but good luck to try to find it. And if you want to get hold of me on air, off air, you have questions, catch me before I go to jail. It's 423-4833. And I'm actually I'm joking about the jail, but not really. It's a possibility now because after what I saw in court today with the cases of Bradley Stewart and Alex DeRosi and how they were treated by Judge Stillman, in the preliminary hearing that lasted 3 days, on essentially no evidence, as far as I could see, that was that rose to the expense and seriousness and burden of taking these people to a felony trial, came out in this 3-day hearing. And I was there for the whole 3 days, taking notes copiously, most of which I'll probably never read again, but there they are. And I kind of posted little updates inviting people to come. Each day the turnout was smaller and smaller in the court, probably because the issues got more and more legalistic and prolix. It's a very arcane thing, conspiracy law, apparently. And a very frightening thing. I read about it in the case of some sort of old conspiracy cases, like the ancient 1960s Chicago 8 or Chicago 7 case, and other cases around the Vietnam War, how they were used to attack and punish political protesters the government didn't like. Well, we're going into that again, and it's the Santa Cruz government that's acting here. And it's frightening. Particularly when one is in the middle of it. So I'm not sure what the outcome of all this is going to be, and I can only encourage the community not to be dismayed, to continue to stand up and do the kind of speaking out and standing up and coming out on the streets and doing what's necessary to confront the authorities when they engage in the kind of collusive behavior they are doing with the 1%, if you will, and not giving up on that. It's kind of a cliche. It wouldn't have been a phrase I would have chosen. But the idea, understanding that so much of America is run by the very, very wealthy and the very, very powerful, and so little, so much is ripped off from the rest of the community, that's such an important understanding. And that something has to be not just, you don't only have to understand it, you have to fight it. And I know everybody's trying to find their own way, but it seems to me that, like with the bundle of sticks, they can break each stick individually, but you put them all together and they can't break them. You know, that's the point. But having said that, let's hear some more of this March Against Foreclosure. And again, I recommend you check out this article in the Good Times. I'm kind of slowly plodding through it. I haven't really had time. As mentioned earlier in this tape, foreclosures in Santa Cruz County have gone up from 109 in 2005 to 1,686 in 2010, and leveled off a little bit, or leveled off and dropped a little bit at 2011 to 1,446. Estimated 1 in 354 homes in Santa Cruz County, according to Patrick Dwyer of the Good Times, received a notice of foreclosure in January, which is a smaller number than in the statewide number. Roughly a third of homeowners are still underwater or owe more on their homes than they are worth in the current market. And 4 years after its inception, without one major bank official brought to trial, the foreclosure crisis is continuing. This story covers the, apparently the crowd is estimated at 200 protesters by this author, the one that you're hearing the tape about. And Steve Plaich did give a speech, and I wish I'd spoken too, about at least the Santa Cruz 11, or the attacks on activists that are happening specifically. First, and there's the 11 that I'm a part of, and then there's the other activists, many of them arrested, ticketed, their property destroyed in the attack on Occupy Santa Cruz over the last 4 months. Because that's kind of where the truncheon meets the noggin, you know. Although, to be honest, I haven't heard of anybody actually being hit with a truncheon in Santa Cruz in this round of protests. A lot of people being falsely arrested, a lot of property destroyed, a lot of constitutional rights crushed, but a number of false charges being taken to court, but no truncheon activity against Occupy people in Santa Cruz. But I may be missing something. And if I am, you can give me a call, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Some more from this article. The stipulated agreement is beginning. A down payment for past fraudulent banking practices, as Steve Plaich, an organizer of Occupy Santa Cruz. There must be and will be much more to come if the economic balance between lenders and homeowners is to be restored. I think there's some stuff going on at the Board of Supervisors, though the real person who can do something about this is Sheriff Phil Wowak, just as he showed no inclination to stop smart meter installation and much more inclination to arrest smart meter, those protesting smart meters. He doesn't seem to have any inclination to stop foreclosures, as some sheriffs in some jurisdictions have done. After all, we don't want to offend the wealthy, do we? I mean, that would be a mistake, and also might risk legal liability. Let's just hear some more from the March 11th foreclosures. No thanks, March.
And we're only taking up one lane of traffic, so they won't blame us for walking in the street, oh, we hope, or walking partially in the street. But are you blocking the bike lane, madam, in your protest?
I'm trying not to, but...
You're trying to hold on to your hat at the same time.
That's not easy. I'm not ambidextrous, after all.
You're right. You want me to hold your literature for you for a moment?
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
You are one of those raging grannies.
Oh, I'm angry. I'm definitely angry.
And you were raging earlier.
Yeah, but it's great to be able to sing about it and have a little sense of humor, because we're really going down the tubes in this country in every possible way.
Well, see, this protest, I hope you don't intend to conspire to do anything illegal that might attract the attention of our local police force.
I might. Who knows? I might get their attention. And who knows, maybe we can kind of pacify them, well, get them on our side. Is that possible?
Well, perhaps song can tame the savage breast or beast or
yes,
whatever.
Yes, definitely. That would be nice.
Well, you know, we do know that there are 11 people indicted for felonious occupation of a vacant bank. What's your opinion of that situation?
Well, I think that the Occupy movement is great. I'm 100% in favor of it. My son and granddaughter went to Washington for the first part of it, and I was very proud of them. So I think that occupying the bank was just fine.
So are you admitting to a conspiratorial involvement in this criminal behavior?
I wasn't involved in the actual occupation, but I respect the people who took that stand. I think it was bold and courageous of them. And more power to them.
We've been talking with
Ann Ogle.
Thank you, Ann. You should be on Free Radio Thursday night, I imagine.
Oh, I'll have my son listen.
Fair enough.
I think he knows you.
Your son's name?
Hausler?
Yeah.
Possibly. Some people, I don't know by name, but...
Yeah, I think he knows you. What is your name?
Robert Norris.
Yes. He has mentioned you many, many times.
Oh, as well he should.
Yes, yes. Yeah, he works for MHPN.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Yeah, yeah. He's a great guy.
Are we going to break the law by...
My stuff?
Yes, right here.
Don't forget it.
I got it. And you have a fine dove of peace in your rather fancy hat. I will say that for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Becky Johns has a sign here. It says, to presume that a person scheming to disrupt public peace while asleep would be unjust and would be entering into the dreams of that person. I think I got most of the quote. Chief Justice B.S. Chauvin ruling February 25th in the Foreign Indian Court. Thank you, Becky.
Yes, the India Supreme Court has ruled that sleep is a human right on par with the right to eat and the right to breathe. But Judge John Gallagher differs.
Indeed, and there will be a trial on March 19th for Gary Johnson on that issue. Well, here's a sign, human need, not corporate greed. What do you mean by this? No? Thanks for helping. Hear about this for Free Radio, perhaps? Talking with...
I'll be talking at the post office, actually, toward the end of the March. So.
Oh, I may or may not be around. Just briefly, what will you be saying at the end of the March, more or less? What's your message to the community?
Well, I'm one of the homeowners in Monterey Bay that's in danger of foreclosure, and I'll be talking about the foreclosure process and getting modifications, how difficult it is, how... The banks are not working at all with the people to get these loans out. They're sitting on the money because they're making money off that. And they really don't. And they're, in fact, even a whistleblower just came out and started talking about how they have intentionally lost paperwork. They are continuously holding up the process. And a lot of us, like myself, have been paying trial periods for 7 months. And you're only supposed to pay for 3. But they are just dragging their feet about this whole thing because they're just keeping that low interest money that they got from the Fed, and they're not giving it out to the people.
Which bank are you involved with? If you want to say.
No,
keeping our close comments.
I'm in the process of a loan modification right now.
So you are, and your free speech is also somewhat intimidated by the process you're having to go through.
Well,
you don't want to offend them, in other words.
No, I don't really care about that, but I don't want to offend myself.
Well, that's always true. I'm not sure I understand, but see, we have a cable.
No, it's not one of the major banks. It's a different bank, so you wouldn't even know what they were if I told you.
But they are doing the same thing the major banks are doing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the little banks are following suit what the big banks are doing.
Yep. Yeah, you keep getting all these little robo things, you know, in the mail, and you have to, well, what the heck? And you call them back, and they go, oh, the computer just spits those out. You can disregard that. And so you're in a situation where, am I supposed to disregard this one, or am I supposed to do something about this one? And it's very confusing.
Are any people getting together in Monterey? Because you are from Monterey, right?
We've talked to some people, but as far as what to do, you know, you can recommend them to work on the modifications. Of course, some people are not going to be able to do that. You know, they're not going to qualify. So I don't really know what to do for those people personally.
Are there many people in Monterey who face this problem who you know of?
I went and looked into it one time, and Monterey did not have a whole lot, but Salinas had a lot. When I looked at the auctions going on, there was about 20 in Monterey, 20 in Seaside, a handful in Pacific Grove, and so forth. But there were like almost 200 of them in Salinas. So Salinas has gotten hit real hard in the foreclosure area. That's where it's hurting the most in Monterey County, I think.
And what's happening with Occupy Monterey? What are they up to?
Oh, let's see. We've got Occupy Monsanto, which we're up to. We're going to be occupying banks.
Vacant banks, I hope, with felony charges.
No. No, we won't be actually trying to take over the bank from the bank. We'll just be expressing our dissent.
Be smarter and take over a bank with money this time. By the way, that's something of a joke for all you DA listeners.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of, busy right now, so I'm going to have to cut you off.
And we've been talking with?
My name is Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
This was the posting of a foreclosed sign on the bank at the corner of Ocean and Water Street. And it was quite a festive event.
Bribery!
Bribery!
Spent a fortune!
Spent a fortune!
Rigging elections!
Rigging elections!
And lobbying against reform!
And lobbying against reform!
It has a title. I'm not going to read the title in the code. Fraud.
Fraud.
Selling subprime mortgage junk.
Selling subprime mortgage junk.
As AAA securities.
As AAA securities.
Three. Extortion.
Extortion.
Threaten to crash economy.
Threaten to crash economy.
Unless they got a bailout.
You want to sign?
Well, I'm going with Brian.
Okay. Proactivity.
Protect your assets.
Protect your assets.
And find a community bank or credit union nearby.
And find a community bank or credit union nearby.
We are putting this on the bank now.
We are putting it on
the bank now.
We are not damaging the bank.
We are not damaging. Tell it to the DA.
A little hollow on that one, huh? We are not what?
This can be easily removed.
This can be easily removed.
With no damage to the window.
With no damage to the window.
We're watching you.
Hey!
Hey!
And at this point, a foreclosure notice was posted on the bank window. Easily removable so as not to suggest a charge of vandalism.
So that's the Santa Cruz 12 and the Santa Cruz 13.
Yeah. More defendants.
So we have two criminals who are defacing the bank even as we speak.
It's dry humor, folks, for those who don't recognize it.
Notice the foreclosure has been posted.
To put up.
individual approaching with a foreclosure for sale sign. Is he going to damage the lawn? This is the question.
Oh, yeah. Louis O'Leary, though.
And it looks like Chase Bank is in foreclosure, for God's sake! And the foreclosure sign for sale, Bank Integrity. And we have three criminal photographers taking pictures over here. No doubt they, too, will be indicted soon.
And this is the Chase Bank again at the corner of Ocean and Water Streets.
Oh, wait, one already has. And there seems to be some new instructions on where and how to march.
Cross the street up there at the light.
Looks like some of the marchers are marching off. It's about 2:10. And away we go. Now that the bank has been foreclosed on, and it's a sad moment for Chase Manhattan. And, of course, the rogue tenth monster. Any comments, tenth monster?
This is fun.
Indeed. As you have your sign, stop foreclosure, you're wearing a tent. Corporations are not people. And there are folks everywhere here with signs, banners, and interesting ideas. I heard that. You're under arrest. People are sedately crossing the crosswalk so as not to offend anyone. I'm walking somewhat jaywalking here.
Not no, but hell no.
Can't you control these jaywalkers?
Jaywalkers.
Blue street. Everyone's street. Blue street.
Our streets.
Streets.
So now we're marching or walking or sauntering up the bike lane of Ocean Street, heading toward the ocean. Makes sense. There are some people with, well, there's one guy with a white armband who's sort of directing traffic. It's relatively loose. People aren't telling others what to do, which is good. Dennis is carrying a peace flag or a picture of the world.
Although that did become a controversy later in the march. I wasn't at the very last stop on the march, which is the Bank of America at, I guess it's Mission and, or at Water and, Front Street? River Street, actually it is. And I'm told there was some concern that a feeling of over-control by some, that monitors are trying to tell people where to go and ask them if they wanted to be arrested, because they were, stepping out too much into traffic. And that became a matter of some discussion afterward. But there was, in fact, a general assembly held after the march, which happens every Sunday, usually at 2 o'clock at the post office. This one happened somewhat later in the afternoon because of the march. And the principals pretty much hugged and kissed and made up and that sort of thing after expressing real concerns that they not be threatened with arrest for taking a march into the streets by their own demonstrator fellows. And that was challenged by one of those who had been so accused, Daryl Darling, who told us later that he didn't intend to do that. He wondered if people seriously wanted to be arrested, because he knew that at some protests such arrests could happen and happen nonviolently, and that they became a sort of a part of the scene. Some people found that a little hard to believe, others didn't. In any case, there was a good time was had by most, and here's some more of that protest again, the March 11th protest last I guess it was last Sunday. Yeah, it was just last Sunday. Boy, so long ago it seems now.
Whose homes? Our homes. Those of us who have homes, that is.
Well, I'm one of the lucky ones.
Oh, ho. You have a... What is your name for Free Radio?
Oh, Suzanne Wilson.
And Suzanne, what brings you to this march, aside from the sunny weather?
A friend brought me to this march.
And had you heard about it before, or did it just come to you today?
Well, I have been shocked at the foreclosures, and I don't know why all these houses are empty, why people don't compromise, why people don't try to work this out. It's just shocking to me, crazy.
Hey, look who we bumped into. So we're standing here right outside the entrance to the county building, and you have a home, you have a house at the moment. Is it in danger of foreclosure?
No, it's not.
And is that because of wise investments or wealthy deep pockets, or you just have a tent for a house?
No, I have a nice house, and I've been very lucky.
So it's more a matter of, you think, good fortune?
Good fortune, yeah. Yeah.
Now, what about these people who occupied this vacant bank building? What do you think of that stuff?
I'm not aware of that. The people that occupied the empty bank.
There are 11 people who are Occupy Santa Cruz related who are, well, actually there were several hundred people in and out of the bank, but...
Is it here in town?
Yeah, it's the Old Coast Commercial Bank that has been across the street from Wells Fargo at 75 River Street.
Oh, okay.
Well, in the future I will educate you on this if I see you again.
Okay.
We've been talking with...
Suzanne Wilson.
Thanks, Suzanne.
You're welcome.
So let me take a look. Are you...
A mountaineer, Jack.
You're a mountaineer and you're supporting ending foreclosure.
I'm not a mountaineer necessarily. I do rock climb on occasion.
But you're colorfully garbed.
Yeah. I'm just wearing my balaclava, so in case we're in solidarity with the other people wearing masks and stuff, so other people who don't want to share their identities. I don't necessarily care about mine, but in solidarity with other people, I wear a mask.
Fair enough. Do you wish to say who you are for our police records?
No, I'm Cowboy Star.
Thank you, Cowboy Star.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
All right, I'm Robert.
Nice to meet you.
You're with Occupy Monterey or from Monterey?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of us here from Occupy Monterey.
And a whole bunch is 5, 28, 30?
15, maybe.
Wow, that's cool. So that's why the crowd is so big. We
bonus people, yeah.
Has Carmel done much about it? Have you had any Carmelites hanging around Occupy Monterey?
Yeah, back and forth. We also go and we visit them on a regular basis. We've been doing a thing with, we have a projector, and we roll up and roll a movie or some titles from a PowerPoint presentation. We're throwing it up on the walls in Carmel. And actually, there's a couple of people here who are Carmel regulars. My girlfriend works in Carmel. She's here somewhere. There's a few others. Actually, one of our other guys works at an art gallery in Carmel, and he's here as well.
Uh-huh. And what's the story with local foreclosures in Monterey and Carmel? Have there been many?
Many, 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 just like there have been here. Even in Pebble Beach, of all places, that is a community that is struggling with foreclosure.
Any auctions that you've been to, foreclosure auctions?
We haven't been to anyone as Occupy Monterey yet, but we plan to disrupt one coming up soon. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Conspiracy to disrupt an auction? That could land you in the clink.
Could.
Well, we'll keep an eye on you and promise you a comfortable cell.
Yeah, awesome. That's how we like it.
I'm just wondering, because I know there are foreclosure auctions every week or so, aren't there?
I wouldn't want to give away too many. I wouldn't want to ruin the surprise.
No, I don't mean your plan, but I mean, in fact, there are foreclosure auctions regularly.
Regularly.
Are they on the steps of the courthouse in Monterey as they are here? Or?
No, I don't know where they are. We would have to, actually, I would ask, Mark.
I'm not sure if I know Mark.
Mark Reed. He would know more than we would. He's here from Monterey.
Okay.
And you were talking to him earlier right in front of Chase.
Oh, okay.
Well, he's wearing beads today.
Well, the fellow's doing the directing. He has the intercom.
Maybe. That's possible.
I think so. I think that's who he is. Very well. We shall talk to him.
Yes. Yeah, fine.
Again, we've been talking with...
This is Cowboy Star, yeah.
Thank you, Cowboy Star. And a lot of people taking pictures. Weather is cleared up, and we have sun, which makes it warm, but not quite unseasonably warm. You're the mastermind behind this conspiracy. You're not the mastermind behind this conspiracy. Let's get it clear here. But you were, in fact, leading the pack at the. No, you weren't. That was it was your double. Let's get this clear. Any comments about today's march?
About today's march? I was hoping there'd be more people. But I think, we did the best we could.
You had what, about a month lead, something like that?
No. We've been planning this for about 3 months.
3 months. Well, looks like the signs are falling down. The pipes are coming apart. There's an actual pipe structure.
We have to figure out what's going on with our outreach.
We'll expect you to take over that whole situation. We'll expect you to research that. We don't know what you're going to do.
Making signs.
Making signs. I know a DA. A couple of court dates we need signs for, Abby. I'm sure we can use you.
Yes, I'll be happy to make you signs.
Oh, that's great. I will keep that in mind. Thank you.
Okay.
And we have a caller on the line. Hey there, caller.
Hey there, Uncle Robert.
What's cooking? Good looking.
Good looking, Uncle Robert. Hey, I just wanted to call. There was a lady that called earlier saying that she thought the people went inside and plotted this action at the abandoned building that could have been a very good Occupy Community Center. All those people who congratulated, I want to congratulate them too. I think it's a shame that, innocent people are being charged because the DA is more interested in a show trial for his political reasons or whatever bullshit. They're interested in a show trial. It's not a real trial. And those charges are bogus, Robert. And they don't have the evidence. It's so phony. And it's even a real sacrilegious dishonor to those who were brave enough to go inside.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has much been happening to you in the last couple of weeks, David. I know that we used to get frequent reports from you when you were out in the wilds getting hassled by the cops and drenched by the elements and mistreated by the agencies. But now it seems like it's all, what's happening with you now?
Well, I am indoors. It's very transitional. It's very iffy. Between April and the 1st of April and the 1st of May, if we don't find another place, I'll be back out of doors again. But I will be a little wiser. I still never got that ticket that I got when we found a real nice place right there, City Hall lawn. It's quiet. There's nobody. No one sees you. I lost Robert. I think I lost you, Robert.
No, I'm still here.
Oh, okay, my phone lit up on me for some reason. Anyway, I haven't been able to clear that ticket because bureaucracies can't speak to each other. That system about getting your tickets cleared if you just were on the waiting list doesn't work. Billy and I were both on the waiting list. My godchild and I were both on the waiting list. And somebody ought to get their finger out of their butt in City Hall and make these kind of programs that are supposed to help homeless people work. Instead, they seem to be focusing on, punishing people that can't do what they can't help but do.
You're referring to a program that says if you the current law says that if you are on a waiting list, you will get your sleeping ticket dismissed. Did you actually
That's
have
what
sleep?
They say, isn't it?
Did you have did you have sleeping tickets that you actually didn't get dismissed?
No, it did not get dismissed. It can't get dismissed. They don't know how to dismiss it. And the one bureaucracy does talk to the other bureaucracy about fixing how they can't communicate about it getting dismissed.
And what was the date on that ticket? More or less?
Yes. It was September 27th or 26th, something like that. We were just got out of the bunkhouse, and we were on the list for... did he rising up the list?
Did you say December 26th, December, or did you say?
Did I say December? I'm sorry, Robert. I meant September.
September. No, you might have said September. I wasn't sure. It's interesting. I mean, supposedly the system has been in effect for, since October of 2010, but apparently it hasn't always been that effective. Have you gotten a failure?
I would call it pretty ineffective when they don't know how to even talk to each other.
Have you gotten a failure to pay notice yet on that ticket?
No, I haven't got any notice. How does anybody get me a notice? Basically helpless, Robert.
Oh, well, this is all your own fault, David. If you weren't a ne'er-do-well, you wouldn't be so homeless. We know that, don't we?
Hey, actually, Robert, I'm quite the opposite of a ne'er-do-well. I'm 68 years old, first time homeless, my 68th birthday. I've always been ready for emergencies. I always had backup. It's just that I was lied, cheated to. I'm a victim of a crime. That's why I'm just in this condition. I was victimized.
David, I think you misunderstand me. I was, in my usual kind of confusing fashion, using a form of deep sarcasm.
I know the sarcasm.
Yeah.
I was trying to just go along with it.
Well, any new information other than your gesture of your statement of support for those being falsely felonized, as we put it, Or any updates? Anything else you want to add?
Well, I've been following a lot of the Occupy sites on my internet and on my Facebook.
Uh-huh.
And I'm finding that a lot of people are doing really, really constructive things. There's a lot of people, trying to make a parallel organization, parallel to unemployment office, parallel to housing authority, and that's a very difficult task. But it may be what we have to do because I don't know if we can trust any of the crooks, and it seems like all the crooks are in charge of all the spots that have power.
Well, maybe we should talk to Keith McHenry and see what he can cook up when he comes to town Sunday after next.
That's the deal.
Yeah, he'll be on the air again, for those who haven't heard, at noon on this Sunday on my radio show, Babbling Away, and you can babble with him and babble at him, or maybe there can be counterpointy type babbling. David, thanks for the call.
Speaking of babbling, I have a show in mind that I've had before.
Oh, yeah?
I'd like to put back on. It's just eclectica music. No, not much talking at all. That's rare for me, I know, but I love music and I love all kinds of different electronics.
Well, give a call. Should bring it into the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. We just got to kick down a little money to help pay the rent, and you're probably
going to do
it.
I might be able to get a grant.
All right. Well, thank you, man. Take care.
Okay, thank you. Bye bye, Robert.
Bye bye. And that's true for anybody. If you want a show with Free Radio Santa Cruz, just go to freakradio.org, fill out an application, send an email to the Central Committee, and you'll be able to come to a Free Radio. Really, what we need to do is actually make a kind of a demo audio so we can see or hear what kind of broadcaster you are. Here's a little more of that endless foreclosure march. And then I'm going to do a little something different. I'm going to play something from Will Durant's The Story of Philosophy about Voltaire, the French philosopher who wrote a lot of philosophical stuff and then really got pissed at what he saw in terms of abuses by the Catholic Church. And this was in the 18th century in France. And it's quite an eloquent description by Will Durant. In fact, I think I'll play it right now. I would just have to wait with the foreclosure march.
Écraser l'infâme. Under ordinary circumstances, it is probable that Voltaire would never have passed out of the philosophic calm of this courteous skepticism to the arduous controversies of his later years. The aristocratic circles in which he moved agreed so readily with his point of view that there was no incentive to polemics. Even the priests smiled with him over the difficulties of the faith, and cardinals considered whether, after all, they might not yet make him into a good Capuchin. What were the events that turned him from the polite persiflage of agnosticism to a bitter anti-clericalism which admitted no compromise, but waged relentless war to crush the infamy of ecclesiasticism? Not far from Ferney lay Toulouse, the seventh city of France. In Voltaire's day, the Catholic clergy enjoyed absolute sovereignty there. The city commemorated with frescoes the revocation of the Edict of Nantes, an edict which had given freedom of worship to Protestants, and celebrated as a great feast the day of the massacre of St. Bartholomew. No Protestant in Toulouse could be a lawyer, or a physician, or an apothecary, or a grocer, or a bookseller, or a printer. Nor could a Catholic keep a Protestant servant or clerk. In 1748, a woman had been fined 3,000 francs for using a Protestant midwife. Now it happened that Jean Calas, a Protestant of Toulouse, had a daughter who had become a Catholic, and a son who hanged himself, presumably because of disappointment in business. There was a law in Toulouse that every suicide should be placed naked on a hurdle, with face down, drawn thus through the streets, and then hanged on a gibbet. The father, to avert this, asked his relatives and his friends to testify to a natural death. In consequence, rumor began to talk of murder and to hint that the father had killed the son to prevent his imminent conversion to Catholicism. Kala was arrested, put to torture, and died soon after, 1761. His family, ruined and hunted, fled to Ferney and sought the aid of Voltaire. He took them into his home, comforted them, and marveled at the story of medieval persecution which they told. About the same time, 1762, came the death of Elizabeth Servin. Again, rumor charged that she had been pushed into a well just as she was about to announce her conversion to Catholicism. That a timid minority of Protestants would hardly dare to behave in this way was a rational consideration, and therefore out of the purview of rumor. In 1765, a young man by the name of Labarre, aged 16, was arrested on the charge of having mutilated crucifixes. Subject to torture, he confessed his guilt. His head was cut off and his body was flung into the flames while the crowd applauded. A copy of Voltaire's Philosophic Dictionary, which had been found on the lad, was burned with him. For almost the first time in his life, Voltaire became a thoroughly serious man. When D'Alembert, disgusted equally with state, church, and people, wrote that hereafter he would merely mock at everything, Voltaire answered, "This is not a time for jesting. Wit does not harmonize with massacres. Is this the country of philosophy and pleasure? It is rather the country of the massacre of St. Bartholomew." It was with Voltaire now as with Zola and Anatole France in the case of Dreyfus. This tyrannous injustice lifted him up. He ceased to be merely a man of letters and became a man of action, too. He laid aside philosophy for war, or rather turned his philosophy into relentless dynamite. During this time, not a smile escaped me without my reproaching myself for it as for a crime. It was now that he adopted his famous motto, "Écraser l'infâme," and stirred the soul of France against the abuses of the Church. He began to pour forth such intellectual fire and brimstone as melted mitres and scepters, broke the power of the priesthood in France, and helped to overthrow a throne. He sent out a call to his friends and followers, summoning them to battle. "Come, brave Diderot, intrepid D'Alembert, ally yourselves. Overwhelm the fanatics and the knaves. Destroy the insipid declamations, the miserable sophistries, the lying history, the absurdities without number. Do not let those who have sense be subjected to those who have none, and the generation which is being born will owe to us its reason and its liberty." Just at this crisis, an effort was made to buy him off. Through Madame de Pompadour, he received an offer of a cardinal's hat as the reward of reconciliation with the Church. As if the rule of a few tongue-tied bishops could interest a man who was the undisputed sovereign of the world of intellect. Voltaire refused, and like another Cato, began to end all his letters with "Crush the infamy." He sent out his treatise on toleration. He said he would have borne with the absurdities of dogma had the clergy lived up to their sermons and had they tolerated differences. But subtleties of which not a trace can be found in the Gospels are the sources of the bloody quarrels of Christian history. "The man who says to me, 'Believe as I do, or God will damn you,' will presently say, 'Believe as I do, or I shall assassinate you.' By what right could a being created free force another to think like himself? A fanaticism composed of superstition and ignorance has been the sickness of all the centuries." No such perpetual peace as the Abbé de Saint-Pierre had pleaded for could ever be realized unless men learned to tolerate one another's philosophic, political, and religious differences. The very first step towards social health was the destruction of the ecclesiastical power in which intolerance had its root. The treatise on toleration was followed up with a Niagara of pamphlets, histories, dialogues, letters, catechisms, diatribes, squibs, sermons, verses, tales, fables, commentaries, and essays, under Voltaire's own name and under 100 pseudonyms. The most astonishing pell-mell of propaganda ever put out by one man. Never was philosophy phased so clearly and with such life. Voltaire writes so well that one does not realize that he is writing philosophy. He said of himself, over modestly, "I express myself clearly enough. I am like the little brooks which are transparent because they are not deep." And so he was read. Soon everybody, even the clergy, had his pamphlets. Of some of them, 300,000 copies were sold, though readers were far fewer then than now. Nothing like it had ever been seen in the history of literature. big books, he said, are out of fashion. And so he sent forth his little soldiers, week after week, month after month, resolute and tireless, surprising the world with the fertility of his thought and the magnificent energy of his 70 years. As Helvetius put it, Voltaire had crossed the Rubicon and stood before Rome. He began with a higher criticism of the authenticity and reliability of the Bible. He takes much of his material from Spinoza, more of it from the English deists, most of it from the Critical Dictionary of Bayle, 1647 to 1706. But how brilliant and fiery their material becomes in his hands. One pamphlet is called The Questions of Zapata, a candidate for the priesthood. Zapata asks innocently, "How shall we proceed to show that the Jews, whom we burned by the hundred, were for 4,000 years the chosen people of God?" And he goes on with questions which lay bare the inconsistencies of narrative and chronology in the Old Testament. When two councils anathematize each other, as has often happened, which of them is infallible? At last, Zapata, receiving no answer, took to preaching God in all simplicity. He announced to men the common Father, the rewarder, punisher, and pardoner. He extricated the truth from the lies and separated religion from fanaticism. He taught and practiced virtue. He was gentle, kindly, and modest. And he was burned at Valladolid in the year of grace 1631. Under the article on prophecy in the Philosophic Dictionary, he quotes Rabbi Nisach's Bulwark of Faith against the application of Hebrew prophecies to Jesus, and then goes on, ironically, "Thus these blind interpreters of their own religion and their own language combated with the church and obstinately maintained that this prophecy cannot in any manner regard Jesus Christ." Those were dangerous days in which one was compelled to say what one meant without saying it, and the shortest line to one's purpose was anything but straight. Voltaire likes to trace Christian dogmas and rites to Greece, Egypt, and India, and thinks that these adaptations were not the least cause of the success of Christianity in the ancient world. Under the article on religion, he asks, slyly, "After our own holy religion, which doubtless is the only good one, what religion would be the least objectionable?" And he proceeds to describe a faith and worship directly opposed to the Catholicism of his day. "Christianity must be divine," he says in one of his most unmeasured sallies, "since it has lasted 1,700 years, despite the fact that it is so full of villainy and nonsense." He shows how almost all ancient peoples had similar myths, and hastily concludes that the myths are therefore proved to have been the inventions of priests. "The first divine was the first rogue who met the first fool." However, it is not religion itself which he attributes to the priests, but theology. It is slight differences in theology that have caused so many bitter disputes and religious wars. It is not the ordinary people who have raised these ridiculous and fatal quarrels, the sources of so many horrors. Men fed by your labors in a comfortable idleness, enriched by your sweat and your misery, struggled for partisans and slaves. They inspired you with a destructive fanaticism that they might be your masters. They made you superstitious, not that you might fear God, but that you might fear them. Let it not be supposed from all this that Voltaire was quite without religion. He decisively rejects atheism, so much so that some of the encyclopedists turned against him, saying, "Voltaire is a bigot, he believes in God." In The Ignorant Philosopher, he reasons towards Spinozist pantheism, but then recoils from it as almost atheism. He writes to Diderot, "I confess that I am not at all of the opinion of Sanderson, who denies a God because he was born sightless. I am perhaps mistaken, but in his place I should recognize a great intelligence who had given me so many substitutes for sight. And perceiving, on reflection, the wonderful relations between all things, I should have suspected a workman infinitely able. If it is very presumptuous to divine what he is and why he has made everything that exists, so it seems to me very presumptuous to deny that he exists. I am exceedingly anxious to meet and talk with you, whether you think yourself one of his works, or a particle drawn of necessity from eternal and necessary matter. Whatever you are a worthy part of that great whole which I do not understand." To Ulbach, he points out that the very title of his book, The System of Nature, indicates a divine organizing intelligence. On the other hand, he stoutly denies miracles and the supernatural efficacy of prayer. I was at the gate of the convent when Sister Fessou said to Sister Confite, "Providence takes a visible care of me. You know how I love my sparrow. He would have been dead if I had not said 9 Ave Marias to obtain his cure." A metaphysician said to her, "Sister, there is nothing so good as Ave Marias, especially when a girl pronounces them in Latin in the suburbs of Paris. But I cannot believe that God has occupied himself so much with your sparrow, pretty as it is. I pray you to believe that he has other things to attend to." Sister Fessou, "Sir, this discourse savors of heresy. My confessor will infer that you do not believe in providence." Metaphysician, "I believe in a general providence, dear sister, which has laid down from all eternity the law which governs all things, like light from the sun. But I believe not that a particular providence changes the economy of the world for your sparrow." His Sacred Majesty, chance, decides everything. True prayer lies not in asking for a violation of natural law, but in the acceptance of natural law as the unchangeable will of God. Similarly, he denies free will. As to the soul, he is an agnostic. 4,000 volumes of metaphysics will not teach us what the soul is. Being an old man, he would like to believe in immortality, but he finds it difficult. Nobody thinks of giving an immortal soul to the flea. Why then to an elephant, or a monkey, or my valet? A child dies in its mother's womb just at the moment when it has received a soul. Will it rise again, fetus, or boy, or man? To rise again, to be the same person that you were, you must have your memory perfectly fresh and present, for it is memory that makes your identity. If your memory be lost, how will you be the same man? Why do mankind flatter themselves that they alone are gifted with a spiritual and immortal principle? Perhaps from their inordinate vanity. I am persuaded that if a peacock could speak, he would boast of his soul and would affirm that it inhabited his magnificent tail. And in this earlier mood, he rejects also the view that belief in immortality is necessary for morality. The ancient Hebrews were without it, just when they were the chosen people, and Spinoza was a paragon of morality. In later days, he changed his mind. He came to feel that belief in God has little moral value unless accompanied by belief in an immortality of punishment and reward. Perhaps, for the common people, la canaille, a rewarding and avenging God is necessary. Bayle had asked if a society of atheists could subsist. Voltaire answers, yes, if they are also philosophers. But men are seldom philosophers. If there is a Hamlet, to be good it must have a religion. I want my lawyer, my tailor, and my wife to believe in God, says A in ABC. So I imagine I shall be less robbed and less deceived. If God did not exist, it would be necessary to invent him. I begin to put more store on happiness and life than on truth. A remarkable anticipation, in the midst of the Enlightenment, of the very doctrine with which Immanuel Kant was later to combat the Enlightenment. He defends himself gently against his friends, the atheists. He addresses old Bach in the article on God in the Dictionary. You yourself say that belief in God has kept some men from crime. This alone suffices me. When this belief prevents even 10 assassinations, 10 calumnies, I hold that all the world should embrace it. Religion, you say, has produced countless misfortunes. Say rather, the superstition which reigns on our unhappy globe. This is the cruelest enemy of the pure worship due to the Supreme Being. Let us detest this monster which has always torn the bosom of its mother. Those who combat it are the benefactors of the human race. It is a serpent which chokes religion in its embrace. We must crush its head without wounding the mother whom it devours. This distinction between superstition and religion is fundamental with him. He accepts gladly the theology of the Sermon on the Mount and acclaims Jesus in tributes which could hardly be matched even with the pages of saintly ecstasy. He pictures Christ among the sages, weeping over the crimes that have been committed in his name. At last he built his own church, with the dedication Deo Erexit Voltaire, the only church in Europe, he said, that was erected to God. He addresses to God a magnificent prayer, and in the article Theist he expounds his faith finally and clearly. The theist is a man firmly persuaded of the existence of a supreme being as good as he is powerful, who has formed all things, who punishes without cruelty all crimes and recompenses with goodness all virtuous actions. Reunited in this principle with the rest of the universe, he does not join any of the sects which all contradict one another. His religion is the most ancient and the most widespread, for the simple worship of a god preceded all the systems of the world. He speaks a language which all peoples understand, while they do not understand one another. He has brothers from Pekin to Cayenne, and he counts all the sages for his fellows. He believes that religion consists neither in the opinions of an unintelligible metaphysic, nor in vain shows, but in worship and in justice. To do good is his worship, to submit to God is his creed. The Mohammedan cries out to him, "Beware if you fail to make the pilgrimage to Mecca." The priest says to him, "Curses on you if you do not make the trip to Notre Dame de Lorette." He laughs at Lorette and at Mecca, but he succors the indigent and defends the oppressed.
And that was a bit from the Story of Philosophy by Will Durant. I particularly like the section on Voltaire's being driven to action by the murderous activities of the Catholic Church in 18th century France. And more important than any of philosophical disputes is the willingness to mobilize opinion to change institutions, and eventually that's what happened through revolutionary activity at the end of the 18th century. You are tuned to Freak Radio. www.freakradio is the website, but unfortunately it's not where you're going to get the stream. You can, however, get information there. You can get our schedule there. You can get some access to archives, though the archives to this show are on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, if you want to go there. Huff is, of course, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And I was really encouraged to hear we actually got somebody who was listening to this show and was sufficiently interested in what I was talking about to show up at a Huff meeting. Thank you, Bob, for doing that, if you're listening. And then to show up in support of, or at least certainly with an interest in, the Santa Cruz defendants. I don't want to call them the Santa Cruz 11 because some of them have gone their separate ways and some of them are still sort of hanging together, but they're all under the same kind of swinging scythe of the DA and the kind of the rather grim chill of these prosecutions. So, yes, it's 101.3 FM you're listening to if you're listening on the radio. And there's about 15 minutes left in the show. Coming up soon, it's Uncle Dennis from the cream to the dregs, where we're going to be dragged through the cream or lifted to the dregs or some such. It's lots of 60s and 70s music with some tidbits and analysis of environmental news thrown in. So a little more from that Sunday protest, and then a little bit of this and that, and then I'm out of here, unless you call in, which case there'll be a little bit of you as well.
Apparently, according to Abby, the next stop is a credit union where we're going to be leaving gifts rather than curses. You're welcome. Join us. We got a gas can with her, this woman standing on the sidewalk. And the chunky tent monster is a fraudishist as well. Shocking. He's kind of waddling about, getting high fives from people on the sidewalk. A man surrounded by a tent, and the label is Tent Monster Rush. We've reached Ocean and Soquel. Again, sunny skies. Remember the power of one, says one woman with a sign. Wake up, America. Mine says Banksters of America. That's the Bank of America logo. Why are you here?
I'm here because my friend Robbie told me about this.
And
I really support the Occupy movement.
And had you been planning for a while to come, or did it just happen spontaneously?
A couple of weeks I've been planning on it and hoping that it wouldn't rain because I wasn't sure I'd be able to.
Hard to carry an umbrella and a sign. What's your name again?
My name is Pam.
Thank you, Pam. I'm Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Pleasure.
Good to see you.
And the call is, this is what democracy looks like, including a volunteer from the state parks. Are you officially representing the state parks?
Well, I am a docent at Natural Bridges, and I am here to represent the monarch butterflies.
I see.
And we don't want to occupy the monarchs. The monarchs want to occupy us.
So it's not a fly-by-night buttery
service. Well, they are definitely on the... can you say on the fly, I guess? Yeah. Okay.
Nothing like that. So, I'm running out of questions. Give me a question to ask you, quick.
Question. Okay. Should I ask you a question?
Sure, if you'd like.
Okay. What do you think of this beautiful spring day?
Well, you know, it's actually not bad. I'm wearing a heavy bathrobe covered with buttons, so I'm... it's kind of warm, and I'm wondering about the...
The clouds, what do the clouds represent?
The clouds seem to... there seems to be a large fog bank coming in, which may cool things up.
That would be a metaphor for what?
The
gathering storm?
The confusion and obscurity of the... here's one of these masked activists. Are you planning to occupy a bank?
Nervous.
She's a nervous activist. Sorry, I think...
Georgia.
I heard you.
Yes, I was saying, I think those clouds represent a gathering storm that's about to be unleashed on the corporate elite.
Oh, you old Marxist dog, you.
Yes, that's exactly right. If Marx was alive today, he probably would have thought that almost all of his prophecies have come to light.
I don't know. These economies seem to be recovering as fast as they're going under, but that's just my thoughts.
This is what's known as the perpetual crisis of capitalism.
Think of it as...
It's in a downward spiral, I would think.
Again, we've been talking with...
Dennis Etler.
Thank you, Dennis. And we are now crossing the plain Soquel Bridge. We have dogs in the march. We have folks with a large banner in front of the march. The Dream Foreclosed Evicted is a picture of a house, and then a small figure leaving with a suitcase. And we're taking one entire lane of this two-lane bridge, one entire side, I should say. The main sign, as carried by four people, says "Stop Foreclosure Fraud." And we have a man with a pooch on a purple leash kind of leading the show. And there's old Anthony, the reoccupier, carrying another foreclosure for sale for shame sign that is going to be perhaps left behind to identify the next bankster situation that we may be approaching. We have numerous young photographers taking pictures. And we have a man with a sign. What are you doing here, sir?
I am protesting.
What exactly are you protesting?
The injustices that our current banking system in this country has put upon us.
Really? Not in Santa Cruz. Though.
No, the entire country. The entire world at this point.
So you have nothing against our local banks?
The local banks are the national banks. Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, so on, so on.
Wells Fargo is a well-known bank that has recently been attacked, vandalized, and looted by a collection of vandals and demonstrators.
I haven't seen any damage around town.
Neither have I, really.
Oh, my fucking...
Yeah, we're going to turn. So there is a leader who is stopping us from crossing against the lights, which is trying to make sure everything is very much in order.
And there's more of the same, and Hopefully you won't be subjected to it on my next show, but you never can tell. If you're not good and don't call in, then you may have to face more of these endless tapes. You never can tell. I did find some interesting stuff online, which sort of caught my eye. You know, it's some of it's lefty rhetoric, but it's infused with truth. Here's something. Is it not... Let's see. How does it begin? Let me get to the right place here. Is it not just as extreme that President Obama claims an unchecked power to assassinate without due process any American living abroad whom he designates as an enemy combatant, or that Joe Lieberman wants to strip Americans of their citizenship not when they are convicted of terrorist activities but upon their being accused and designated as enemy combatants? Crazy, kooky, extreme actions are perpetrated by establishment centrists far more often than by those typically derided in mainstream circles as crazy. This is part of an article about Dennis Kucinich, who has lost his primary bid, and he will not be running for in the Democratic Party column, and so he's sort of out as of the beginning of next year. I've not been a huge Dennis Kucinich fan. I felt he's, though he says good things against the war, he goes to the Democratic Party when the chips are down. And he does, however, get some positive coverage from columnist Glenn Greenwald, who I have a lot of respect for. At least I read his columns with some interest. And here's a little of what Greenwald writes. Last week's Representative Dennis Kucinich, who's an Ohio representative in the House of Representatives in Congress, was defeated in a Democratic primary by a Representative Marcy Kaptur after redistricting pitted the two long-term incumbents against each other. Kucinich's fate was basically sealed, and the new district contained far more of Kaptur's district than his. His 18-year stint in the House will come to an end the next Congress when it is installed in the beginning of 2013. Establishment Democrats have long viewed Dennis Kucinich with a mixture of scorn, mockery, and condescension. True to form, the establishment liberal journal American Prospect gave Kucinich a little kick on the way out, comparing his political views to the 1960s musical Hair. The Ohio loser talked about harmony and understanding, deriding him as a favorite among lefty college kids and Birkenstock wearers around the country, and pronouncing him among the wackiest members of Congress. Don't go away. Yes, that was the American Prospect, not the Weekly Standard. And the point of Glenn Greenwald is that the American Prospect is a liberal so-called publication. The Prospect article also praises as great a snide, decisive Washington Post piece which purports to highlight some of the particularly bizarre so-called facts about Kucinich. Among those is the fact that he introduced impeachment articles against former President George W. Bush and former Vice President Cheney for their roles for the Iraq War, and proposed a cabinet-level agency devoted to peace. What a weirdo and a loser. Even more predictably, a team of four interns at the New Republic, the magazine that spent years crusading for the attack on Iraq, smearing Israel critics as anti-Semites, and defaming its editorial mission as remaking the Democratic Party in the image of, defining its editorial mission to remake the Democratic Party in the image of Joe Lieberman, denounced the anti-war Kucinich as ludicrous, citing most of the same accusations as the other two papers, The Prospect and The Post. So, that's something that interested me. It's depressing to watch, although, again, as I said, I've never been... People who stay in the Democratic Party always impress me as kind of... ultimately acting against the interests of anti-war folks, even if they can occasionally tease out an anti-war vote here and there, if the general force is to proceed with the war juggernaut, as seems to be the case nationally, it's kind of pointless and doesn't make much sense. So, I was downtown a couple of days ago, and I ran into some, I think they are Peruvian musicians, so I'm going to let them... They don't sing, but they play for themselves, assuming I can find the proper disc. And I'm going to kind of go out on that. They're here somewhere. Here they are. Andy's Cosmos. And you can find them downtown. They really play beautifully at the corner of New Leaf, where the New Leaf Market is at Pacific and Soquel. I will be back on Sunday, probably 9:30 in the morning. I don't know about Thomas Levitt. Troublesome Thomas sometimes comes into the studio kind of 7:30 and gets through a variety of information and other fields, a couple of sometimes, I don't want to say contentious, let's just say, active phone calls. So that's coming up. Let's see if there's anything I want to pass on before I pass out here. I do want to remind people there is a Keith McHenry event coming up and next Sunday after next, March 25th, and an emailer chided me that I'd better check with my sources before I give misinformation, and that's certainly always good advice. But this event will be happening at 4:30. We'll be at India Joe's, and I can't tell you exactly how much it's going to be, if it's going to be that much at all. In fact, I think that's what I said before, but I do encourage people to show up and take a look. Keith McHenry is an articulate, intelligent, humorous, and fun speaker. And I would suspect that few people will be turned away from his speech. But, you know, again, you know, I could be wrong. I'm not as infallible as I hope to be. Also, next Sunday, when I'll be coming back, that's in 4 days, or actually 3 days, I'll have him on the air at noon. So if you tune in at noon, assuming he remembers and calls me, we will have a discussion with him about what he's up to. He was up in San Francisco when I last spoke to him yesterday or the day before, tracking down a Reoccupy in San Francisco. He's ever optimistic, ever hopeful, and pushing for reoccupations throughout the country. At the same time, watching occupations going under. He reported Tucson went down a couple days ago, but there are occupations that are up in Florida and in Massachusetts. And he's ever hopeful that things will rise again. Sometimes they rise in different forms, so we have to see what comes next. That's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Let's listen to a little softer music. And if you want to catch me off here, 423-HUFF, 423-4833 is the number to call, and I'll get back to you. Thanks for being with me. Come back again. And we'll talk. Well, no wonder that disc was so cheap. Let's try another track. Oh, what a pity. Well, I will turn instead to something a little more traditional. Let's see how this goes. Assuming I can open the disc up. Uncle Dennis should be coming in shortly, so have no fear.
friend told me someday the world might lose my pay. I thought, would it really matter if I left here now? See the all fake love while the snake love make love happens all the time. Come on, Jesus, make snakes a crime. You see, ought to be a law for people who want a snake love. Come on, make it a crime. Try to come on, take love. Well, I got my mind and my heart made up. Lord, I've got one big cup. I hope you help me fill it up, Lord. Well, I found myself drowning in my own wet dream. I thought, Lord, come and get me while I got a smile. See, I'll take love while it's fake love. Snake love happens all the time. But come on, Jesus, make snakes a crime. You see, I'll be lost, but people want a fake love. You see, make it a crime for those who want to take love. Well, my heart made up. I've got this one big cup, Lord. Come on, come on, let me fill it up.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. And Robert has decided that he wants... Do you want this CD, Aaron, the street songs?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. He's taking his CD and he's going to leave, hopefully, sometime. Going to go out in the rain and get wet, huh? Anyway, he left me with an empty CD player, so I'm going to attempt to fill it here for you. So, name of my show is From the Cream to the Dregs, and we will get started here in just a second. I do want to remind our listeners that Free Radio is listener-supported. That means, as a listener, you need to support us. Otherwise, there won't be anything to listen to.